Blog Talk Radio.
I'm a truth terrorist. I'm a knowledge gangster. I'm a black history hitman. I'm a lie killer, urban gorilla. I gotta be a roughneck.
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for Free the Black Panthers. If up the black police, that 13th Amendment. Trying to make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free. Okay, free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for Free the Black Panthers. And fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here. Up coin tail pro. Show. They got me started, lying hearted. I'm the new Mufasa. And I'm all about Umoja, first in Gruz Usaba. Let's bring back the black families, we need our father. Single mama, son and daughter, that's root of the problem. Wise up, we wise up, unity so powerful. Black banks, black schools, black owned, black power moves. You telling lies, you think this shit gon' be televised. Black power, be scared guys, that be standing there like they paralyzed, ha. We say fuck all the system, cause we above the system. We keep ARs and pistols, shotguns that's worth the crystal. But that's for self-defense, make sure we have no issues. Be sure to leave it at the door if you have it with you. This for them freedom fighters, that lost their freedom. Until they freedom, we screaming carpe diem. This for the general, King Khalid Muhammad. We gon' make your day a holiday, I fully promise.
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for Free the Black Panthers. If up the black police, that 13th Amendment. Tryna make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free. Okay, Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for Free the Black Panthers. And fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here. Up coin tail pro.
RBG, 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 RBG. My sisters, my brothers, the counselor, the elder, cause that's really all I need. We suited, we booted, don't do it, you stupid, we head to the armory. Black woman and goddess, regardless, my heart just don't fuck with misogyny. Bullshit, I don't tolerate it. Melanated, so you gotta hate it. Barack upped up another conversation. Trump finna get inaugurated, damn. Unify or die, NBPP.org.
First and foremost, the new Black Panther Party, no other Black Panther Party, we are not violent. We are for self-defense and self-determination. The most violent group in this country are the police. What is taking place by the police department to black people across this country is ethnic cleansing and genocide. It has escalated since the day that Barack Obama was inaugurated in 2008. We have a people who are only 13% of the population, yet we make up 80% of the prisons. We have 50% unemployment rate in the black community, and it's actually even more than that because they're not counting our people that are in the prison. The 13th Amendment says you cannot be made a slave or indentured servant unless you commit a crime. The 14th Amendment forced our people to be subjects of this government. We never had any say in that. We need our own nation.
All right, we're about to get it started. All right, good morning, everyone. Before we begin, I want to make an announcement that the restrooms are right to our right, right behind the Taco Limon sign. Today is Friday, September 23rd, 2022, and the time is 9:06 a.m. The AB3121 Task Force meeting is now called to order. Good morning, everyone. My name is Camila Moore, and I'm the chairperson of the task force. Before we begin, let's go to Parliamentarian Johnson to do a roll call vote for attendance and establish whether we have a quorum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will begin with Chair Moore.
Present.
Vice Chair Brown.
Mike. Present.
Member Bradford.
Here.
Member Grills.
Grills.
Present. Member Jones Sawyer.
Present.
Member Holder.
Here.
Member Lewis.
Present.
Member Montgomery Steph.
Here.
And Member Tamaki.
Here.
Madam Chair, there are nine task force members, and the number needed for a quorum is 5. The number present is 9. Madam Chair, a quorum has been established.
Thank you, Parliamentarian Johnson. Members of the task force and members of the public, welcome to the California Reparations Task Force 10th hearing and second in-person hearing in Los Angeles, California. From a review of the agenda, you can see that it is a full agenda. So to ensure that we complete it during the time allocated, we will need to make sure that the following timeline is established. So the next agenda item on our agenda is number 2, public comment from 9:05 to 10:05. It's 9:07, so public comment will be from 9:07 to 10:07. 30 minutes will be reserved for in-person public comment, and the last 30 minutes will be reserved for virtual public comment. And Ms. Aisha Martin-Walton will be assisting us in this effort.
Good morning. Good morning, task force members and the public. Welcome to public comment. As Chair Moore has indicated, there's an hour for public comment, 30 minutes will be for in-person, and 30 minutes for callers on the phone. We'll start with the in-person. And just so you know that each person will have 3 minutes to speak, please be advised that in fairness to everyone, at the three-minute mark, you may be politely interrupted. And for those who are in person, I also have cards that have the time. At the end of the public comment period, please take your seat. And we will continue, and also know that if you don't have an opportunity to make comments today, we will have public comments again tomorrow morning, and or at any time, you can submit your written comments to reparationstaskforce@doj.ca.gov. So why don't we go ahead and begin? First speaker, please.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Friday Jones. My name is Constance Jones Muhammad. I am the president of the National Assembly of American Slavery Descendants. We will be hosting our inaugural reparations summit next weekend in Atlanta at the National Center for Civil and Human Rights, and tickets are still available at Eventbrite. I am also the co-chair of the Los Angeles chapter, which is a member of the Coalition for a Just and Equitable California. I am the vice president of Los Angeles's Blue Ribbon Reparations Advisory Commission, as appointed by Mayor Garcetti, and today I'm here speaking as an individual. Reginald Jones Sawyer introduced California AB 2296 Task Force to study and develop reparations proposals for African Americans to the Assembly on February 16, 2022. This commission held public hearings on February 23rd, 24th, March 29th and 30th, April 13th and 14th. At no point during these sessions was AB 2296 placed on the agenda before this body or the public at large. The National African American Reparations Commission, of which Dr. Cheryl Grills was appointed in January 2022, issued a letter asking Governor Gavin Newsom to sign AB 2296. And the most striking part of their letter for me was, and I quote, AB 2296 ensures public oversight of the California Reparations Task Force by striking lifetime appointments of the chair and vice chair and allowing for elections of offices and subcommittees. The letter goes on to say there is little public oversight to protect the task force from issues concerning internal governance, appointments, and structures. I think that's what the Bagley-Keene Act was for. Section 2 of AB 2296 amends Section 8301.2e of the code to now read, an appointee may be removed at the pleasure of their appointing authority. This dramatically changes AB 3121's language, and I believe that NARC in the letter to Governor Gavin Newsom identifies the intended targets of this change as Chair Moore and Vice Chair Brown. I do not mince my words. Your actions are unethical. This is your final term as Assembly Member for Council District 59 in Los Angeles. The membership of NAASB Los Angeles is here in Los Angeles, and I will utilize every ounce of my influence to ensure that the descendant community with ties to the South that have our ancestors buried in segregated graveyards to have lineage repair in the state of California. Judas betrayed Jesus for 30 shekels of silver with a kiss. I urge this body to ask Gavin Newsom to veto AB 2296 in its current form, leave the integrity of AB 3121 intact. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. Our next speaker.
Good morning, Chair Moore, Vice Chair Brown, Task Force members. My name is Marcus Champion. I'm a California native born and raised in Inglewood, currently residing in South Central Los Angeles. I'm a board member for the Coalition for a Just and Equitable California and a founding member of the National Assembly of American Slavery Descendants Los Angeles, NAASBLA. Today is the beginning of the second phase of this reparations process, and I would like to extend my thanks to the task force for their historic work thus far. I also want to again recognize and celebrate Chair Moore, Vice Chair Brown, and members Bradford, Montgomery, Steph, and Scott Lewis for voting to make the standard of eligibility lineage-based as opposed to race-based. As we move into this final proposal phase, I want to implore the task force to maintain the same boldness and see no limits when it comes to crafting the necessary proposals that will lead to transformative justice for the African American descendants of persons enslaved in the United States who reside in California. I also want to reiterate that among the numerous policy remedies and legislation that must be crafted, that direct cash payments to the eligible recipients be the first priority. Finally, I want to express my vehement opposition to AB 2296. This legislation was not asked for by the public or members of the task force, nor were they even made aware, which speaks to the unethical spirit of the bill. Member Jones Sawyer made sure he kept AB 2296 in the shadows as much as possible while moving it through the California legislature, only making one public comment prior to a couple of weeks ago, and his reasoning was to keep the task force together to educate the public, which makes no sense because your operation would still be restricted by the Bagley-Keene statute. Under the cover of more darkness, Member Jones Sawyer added an amendment that allows for members to be removed by their appointing body. Allowing members to be removed 15 months into this 24-month process makes this commission vulnerable to special interests in politics and ultimately threatens the credibility of the whole process. Considering as goes California, so goes the nation, this means potentially deeper ramifications for federal reparations. To quote Member Jones Sawyer, this allows for problematic members to be removed. Despite philosophical disagreements, this process has been excellent thus far, and the only member who has acted in a problematic manner has been Member Jones Sawyer when he threw an unprofessional tantrum and attempted to bully Chair Moore because he did not get his way when it came to the eligibility vote during the March hearing. If this law is signed by Governor Newsom, Assemblymember Reggie Jones Sawyer is the problematic member who should be removed because we must respect the legislative intent of the author of AB 2296. To the rest of this body, continue to do good work and your community supports you. Thank you.
Hello, Tess. Oh, there we go. Okay, so thank you so much. But before you begin, we have two speakers who need an accommodation who will follow you. Thank you so much. You may begin.
Good morning. My name is Sarge Hall. I am a retired combat veteran. I'm the at-large rep for the Mid-City Neighborhood Council as well as board member for the South Los Angeles Alliance of Neighborhood Councils, and I am a descendant of the Honorable Biddy Mason. I'm sending greetings from Georgia, which is Georgia and Florida, which is my roots. And I want to say that I missed my tea time to come here and I wasn't really expecting this. But I want to say that I have concerns about Black California. Before we even get to reparations, I believe that we need to have a forum called the State of Black California. With California only being 6.5% African American and the majority of them in Los Angeles. In 20 years, there will only be 2.5% African Americans. And what we left in California, what we cannot do is allow these reparations to serve as an exit strategy. Also, we cannot allow these reparations to be a boost to Governor Gavin Newsom, who is running ads in Florida. When I went to my property in Florida this year, I cut on the TV and I see him basically getting ready to run for presidency. So we cannot let these reparations go without us having a hand up in this situation if Gavin wants to run for president. And you know what I'm talking about, the behind the closed doors conversations. If he passes this, if we get these reparations passed, he can use this as a springboard. And he, what we cannot do is allow him to use us. With that being said, the money alone is not enough. I'm afraid that if you give checks to folks, the average person is going to go to the liquor store. They're going to go to the weed shop, and we're going to lose equity in our neighborhood. Follow what I'm saying. Follow what I'm saying. Not everyone. Follow what I'm saying. When you follow what I'm saying, there needs to be some type of community equity-based option if you give a check to where a person can put into a system to help grow our communities. I'm on these boards and I'm riding around. Listen, Black Los Angeles is losing. I know y'all want to sit here and act like it's not happening, but in 20 years, there won't be any Black folks. So this money can serve as a positive or a negative. And I'm praying that it serves as a positive, but there must be parameters put around. And last but not least, in the reparations package, I would like to see some type of satellite historically Black college brought out here to the West Coast. So again, Black California, pay attention. It's only 6.5% of us. We can be easily gentrified. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Now that I have your attention, I am Emeritus Professor Joyce Faye Allen Hamilton, and my sister, Emeritus Professor Janelle Allen. My sister has been a professor at Compton College for 38 and a half years. Because we combined our thoughts, we decided that one of us would speak. And since I'm the baby girl, I was chosen. You know how that is. Is that okay with the task force? I've been waiting for over 30 years to have this conversation about reparation. So I'm very passionate about this. So if you can be with me, be passionate about what I'm saying. We were born and reared in Los Angeles, California. The sisters bring greetings to all task force members, committee members, distinguished guests, and to the audience. I have taught at many colleges and ended my professorship at Los Angeles City College with a combination of teaching for 35 years. My mother always stated, quote, always try to be the best or next to the best or among the best, unquote. She died at the age of 97 last year, July 15, 2021. I received an award for the first Black teacher of the year at Los Angeles City College. I want to be an inspiration to you. It is a privilege and an honor to speak before this task force this morning. I want to honor you and applaud you for countless and tireless days, hours, and minutes that you've spent on this task force. This is not an easy job, but you were born to do this. God has chosen you to help create the blueprint for reparation. Reparation is a check owed to Black Americans for the enslavement of ancestors that must not bounce, but must be cashed upon receiving it. This will be marked in the history book as to what you've done for Black Americans. My sister and I want to encourage you to keep working assiduously. Whatever the mind can conceive, the mind can achieve, by Professors Joyce and Janelle Allen. What do elderly Black Americans need for the California reparations? As an elderly Black American, my sisters and I, including my husband, his father was a sharecropper. We do not need to continue our education, nor obtain jobs, nor housing. What we would like is monetary compensation, loan forgiveness for our nieces. And I just wanted to say this, if you can, if you can think it, you can do it. If you can see it, you can believe it. If you can practice it, you can improve it. If you can trust it, you can make it. If you can fix it, you can solve it. If you can start it, you can finish it.
I'm so
Thank
sorry
you
to
very,
interrupt
very
you.
Much, everyone.
Perfect.
Thank you. God bless you.
Thank you. And I believe our next speaker, the next young lady, please come forward. We'll continue. Thank you very much. You may begin.
Good morning. Can you hear me through my mask? Okay. Good morning, Task Force and community. My name is Winona Valentine.
I am founder and executive director of I Dream for Racial Health Equity. Our team is comprised of 24 advisory members, staff, and consultants. Our 28-year storied mission equips a learning community of visionaries with a comprehensive understanding of maternal and infant health throughout the life course and responds to the urgent call to support and strengthen the Black perinatal workforce and allies. I am a member of the Black Equity Collective, and I participated in the listening session experience on May 25th, 2022. My role as a 26-year CBO leader brings forward the need for reparations and investments in the financial stability of nonprofit organizations over a 10-year period. We're talking about fiscal year 2023 to fiscal year 3033. For example, reparations for iDream is an investment in personnel costs for 5 full-time professional community staff. The amount equals to $628,618.24 for 1 year. Over 10 years, the investment equals $6.3 million. The current living wage is $92,996.30 in Los Angeles County for one adult and one child. For me, that means a single mother raising their one child. That salary does not include taxes and health benefits, and the source for that is the living wage calculator for LA County. Black-led CBO leaders are innovators, and we are risk takers. We respond with community-led interventions, yet too many of us began as underfunded startups with underemployed staff. Reparations provide the financial investment of our business model above and beyond programs and services. The importance of a community listening session is to ensure that more voices like ours are included in the reparations discussion. Eligibility was voted on, but that varies upon what you heard in the listening session. The task force has engaged economists. CBO leaders like myself can provide similar or more relevant expertise. And then finally, bringing greater awareness to the community provides input on reparations. My story as a CBO leader cannot look backwards to 1996 compared to the white-led startup organizations that are now multi-million dollar CBOs in the same period. Reparations can financially sustain the future of Black-led CBO leaders, provide living wages, and anchor long-term hope and healing in our communities. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments. Next speaker, please.
Thank you so much for this opportunity. My name is Zachariah McGee. I am an activist for reparations for the modern-day descendants of American Negro slaves. I had a Facebook page of that same title, and it did get shut down. Okay. Currently, I'm touring Los Angeles churches with a two-part PowerPoint presentation, first entitled "The Reparations for the Modern Day Descendants of American Negro Slaves," and the second, "The Truth About the American Negro." Now, my father was born in 1934. My mother was born in 1938, both in Vicksburg, Mississippi, in the middle of the Jim Crow South. They went through horrendous intimidation and discrimination, and that was felt in the household that I grew up in. My parents were amongst the Great Migration in the late 50s up to the northern states. I grew up in Aurora, Illinois. And what I want to say to you, my appeal to you, is that American slavery, okay, the American pastime of lynching my people, the burning, the bombing, the murderous rampage that destroyed the Black Wall Street, that is enough evidence right there, cold, hard, documented evidence that we deserve these reparations. So don't spend too much time tasking and examining how to give this money out. Know that that money is due my people. I think it was, what, literally a year ago that I think, what, 20 Asian people got attacked in public. Within 3 months, there was an Asian hate crime bill signed, and it is now against the law to victimize any Asian person. So what are we talking about? We know in 1941 that the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor and that Japanese Americans were put in internment camps. We all learned this in high school. But then in 1988, did Japanese get their reparations? They sure did. So we're still waiting. In 2009, the United Nations was calling for Black Americans to receive reparations. And guess who blocked that? Obama. He shut it down. He said, you're not going to intimidate and disrespect white people on my watch. Basically, essentially, that's what he was saying. So please, don't spend all this time task forcing and examining. The evidence is clear. The reparations is there. If you're interested, I'm currently touring Los Angeles with those PowerPoint presentations. If you're interested in those, please approach me and I can hook you up with the presentation to continue bringing awareness to these reparations and show the less fortunate of our people who they are. My last thing is, you don't have to give no money to no crackhead. You don't have to do that. You wouldn't do that anyway. So why would you do that? And that's not an important point to bring out anyway. We have a lot of educated, powerful people. We have the means. The problem is that we're not together. We will not come together to do what we need to do the nation building within our people. And we should not be afraid to come together. We should be respectfully, unapologetically, all Black in what we do for our people. Thank you for this time.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Hi, everyone. Good morning. It's so great to see so many Black folks in the space today. Thank you, Task Force, for the work that you do. My name is Casey Patterson. I'm the founder and chief architect of the Black Equity Collective. We are an ecosystem of 25 philanthropic partners and 52 Black-led and Black-empowering organizations across Los Angeles, San Bernardino, and Riverside counties. Our mission is to join funders and communities to strengthen the long-term health and sustainability of Black-led organizations. We were one of the anchor organizations that hosted a community listening session. In May, we hosted over 60 Black nonprofit leaders across Southern California, leaders who have not only experienced the harm of systemic racism personally and with their families, but who also work on the front lines in our communities, serving hundreds and collectively thousands of Black residents every year. We knew their perspective on reparations would include stories of personal harm and triumph, as well as harm they've experienced as employers, community advocates, and service providers. I'd like to submit a report documenting the top line findings and recommendations from our session, which I have with me and I'm happy to distribute. The information is also aggregated in the report that you're going to be receiving from the Bunch Center. Overall, we heard a wide-ranging account of experiences with structural and systemic racism, including maternal and infant mortality, pay inequity, racism in schools, barriers to philanthropic and public funding, housing discrimination, wealth deprivation, land theft, police terror, and the targeting and dismantling of the Black family unit. They've experienced these things because they're Black. Whether their ancestors descended from stolen Africans who populated the American South or stolen Africans who immigrated from another colonized land, racism has not separated them by lineage. As you can see or will see in our report, there were various perspectives on the eligibility question and nuance in how our community thinks it should be applied to different forms of reparations. There are still over 3 million Black Californians, and their voices deserve to be heard, considered, and respected before the question of eligibility was prematurely decided by this body. I want to implore this body and ask that moving forward, the task force make a stronger effort to solicit community input before making major decisions on any reparations framework. Our members were deeply moved by the opportunity to weigh in on this conversation and asked to stay engaged. This body has a responsibility to hear from those who have been silenced and erased, whose stories were never invited into the policymaking arena. For that reason and many others, this effort should include hiring and retaining a reputable communications firm to help promote your work, continuing to put significant resources toward community engagement and partnering with community-based organizations like ours
to
ensure that you're reaching the entire community.
We have to get this to the next speaker. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next speaker, please.
Hello. Hello, everybody. My name is Milagro Jones. I'm an undergraduate student at UCLA, and I transferred from Los Angeles Trade Technical College. So I want to shout out these professors that worked in the LACCD, because without people like them, I wouldn't be here today. You know what I'm saying? But I'm a single parent. I've been raising my daughter by myself since she was 5 months old, and she is 8 years old now. And I just want to say that, you know, before I even start, I want to speak on people talking about crackheads shouldn't get no money. My stepmama was a crackhead, and she was still a black woman. Excuse me. She deserved money just like anybody else deserved money. She's still a human being. Excuse me. But I just want to say that as a single parent here in Los Angeles, all of these people that's up here right now, I'm sure you have done something that's been helpful for me. You know what I'm saying? Holly Mitchell's bill, I think it's called 329 or 325, that stopped discriminating against Section 8. That got me and my daughter into a home from homeless shelters. So it's a lot of work that's been done, but at the same time, everywhere I go, I'm discriminated against with my daughter. When I walk down the street, the LAPD pull up and say, y'all look suspicious. Do you know this man? The LA Sheriff's Department broke into my home, harassing me, sending emails to the neighborhood council. He got found guilty of this stuff. He still work with black people in the community. You know what I'm saying? Everywhere I go, whether it's LASA, the Los Angeles Homeless Service Authority, whether it's in my neighborhoods that I've lived in, no matter where I go, if it's in the good side of town, the bad side of town, Skid Row, I lived all over the city. It's always discrimination. Black people are treated like garbage in this country. Me and my daughter is stepped on and walked on everywhere we go.
Connected, so we can actually have another public speaker. Mr. Ken Burns, are you in the audience? Mr. Ken Burns, will you please come down and give public comments while we try to reconnect the line?
Hello.
Oh, there you go. Good morning.
Good morning. Kenneth, just a second. Well, I'll be mindful for the other people that was in line the whole 3 minutes. My grandparents, both my grandmothers are from Louisiana. My grandfather is from Texas and Arkansas. I wanted to talk about eligibility and community input, but to share a little bit about myself. I have a condition called muscular dystrophy, which is rare in the Black American community, even rarer in my family lineage. The highest prevalence of this condition is in America. The lowest is found in Africa. The violence and the experiences and atrocities that affected my ancestors continue to affect me to today. This condition that I deal with is rare in amongst a lot of people, but it's predominantly found in the Caucasian European ancestry. I'm a living example of the wrongdoings to my ancestors. This condition has affected me in so many ways. In the dreams I've had as a young man, the things that I wanted to do, which, yes, I'm still able to do and figure it out, but is this a difference when you deal in an ableist society that a lot of people don't even talk about? I was able to graduate from Crenshaw High. The services for disabled students at that school and probably many other schools, as you know, in our communities do not get the proper resources and support. I went on to go to school in Atlanta at a black university, historical black university. And while they are very, you know, supportive as well, but a lot of their resources don't really be up to par of what disabled persons need. And currently in my life right now, at 40 years old, I don't get the proper support. These decisions that's going to be made today for me is very important, especially to the health conditions that black people across America. What I want to say about eligibility is that I do believe that there should maybe be a priority or phases, maybe, that could be considered, starting with, yes, individuals that are direct or descendants of slavery, and then consider for the next phase of funding for other folks that are and experience racism throughout America. Community input, I think, is very important. Oh, time's up. All right. Just do a better job of letting the community know about this conference, the task force.
Thank you so much. Kat?
Thank you very, very much.
Kat, I wanted to just check in. Okay, our next speaker from the public in person would be Kristen N. Please come forward. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Good morning, task force members. My name is Kristen Nimmers. I am Policy and Campaign Manager with the California Black Power Network. Black Power Network is a member of the Task Force Committee Engagement Steering Committee, and we hosted 10 listening sessions over the summer. During these listening sessions, we heard from hundreds of community members across the state in the Bay Area, Central Valley, Los Angeles, San Diego, and Inland Empire, many of whom had only recently learned about the establishment of the task force and their ability to provide input through our outreach. During our listening sessions, we heard a range of perspectives on eligibility and the potential forms of reparations that would aid in the healing of our community. Many of the participants lifted the need for this to be repaired to the full Black community due to the shared harms and impacts on the status, well-being, and conditions of our neighborhoods that we know stem from this country's history of slavery and systemic racism. There was recognition of the distinct harms suffered by descendants of American slaves, and also acknowledgement of the ways our communities are indistinguishably treated by law enforcement, in education and employment, in our healthcare systems, and more. There is concern about the ability of the community to prove lineage, about the exclusion of community members who don't have that documentation, and about the nuance between Black immigrant communities that came here at different times for different reasons, including before, during, and after the civil rights movement. In our outreach, our listening sessions, for our listening sessions, we identified almost 9,000 people who wanted to attend listening sessions and provide input, so we know that there are many more community members and perspectives we have not yet heard. We encourage the task force to read the Bunch Report to see the diversity of thought on the question of eligibility and reconsider its decisions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, I think we're ready to go back to the callers in line. So, Stephen, our next speaker, please. Okay, we'll take the next public speaker in person. That would be Kenneth. Kenneth, are you in the audience? Can you please come forward? Thank you so much.
Hello, everyone. My name is Ken Henderson. I am a direct descendant of Seminole Chief Billy Bowlegs. Wake up, Black California. We as Black Californians are heirs to Black indigenous dynasties like the Moors of the Cowkeepers, also known as Black Seminole Warriors who defeated the U.S. Army three times. If your names are on the 1835 Henderson Roll, you are in fact indigenous heirs to lands here in America, as unlimited wealth, indigenous lands owed to you with oil and gas leases denied to California heirs. Okay. Recognize the destruction of Tulsa's Black Wall Street was to conceal we are the direct descendants, not just from slaves, but from various indigenous Black tribes who were able to create businesses from inherited wealth, from oil and gas leases, from allotted lands given to deceased family members. Land royalties as generational wealth now being denied to us by the state of California through fraudulent vital records and probates. Look at your grandmother's and grandfather's wills and look at their death certificates. If you see unknown, that is directly linking to inheritance that's owed to you. If your name is on that Henderson roll, you are indigenous. You are not African descent. We are asking Governor Newsom to financially approve Black Californians with full legal support and reparations to resolve fraudulent court probates deliberately denying to properly state Black heirs of inherited estates from indigenous and Indian territories. Support to correct vital records of Black indigenous heirs with names listed as unknown to deny such inheritance. And lastly, we are asking Governor Newsom and the state of California to minimize billions in America's wealth gap between white and Black Americans by targeting
billions from its U.S. railroad industry, retirement holdings, owed to Black Americans who built the Confederate railroads of Southeastern America. Black Americans further worked 100-plus hours a week as pullmen and brakemen before abruptly displaced from their jobs and brought here to California. Many of you guys are being told that you are just descendants of slaves, but you are actually indigenous to this land. Look up. Yes. No, but the money is there. I'm saying there's billions of dollars in holding a railroad that our families, grandfathers and grandmothers work. We don't have to change what they're saying. I agree. Take that. That money is owed to us.
Excuse me. Your time is up. Thank you so much for your comments this morning. Thank you. All right. Chair Moore, the lines are back up. We can now go back to our call-in commenters. So, Stephen, do you have the next commenter for us?
Line 60, please go ahead. Line 60.
Hello. Can everyone hear me?
Yes. Can you speak a little bit louder, but... You're doing good.
Sure. Hello, my name is Sarah Wesley. I am a resident of Sacramento, California. I am a descendant from slavery by way of my father from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And even though I don't have the paper trail, our family doesn't have a paper trail as far as who are slave owners were back when my great-great-grandmother and grandfather were there. We do know who we are and where we come from. I just want to say that as far as lineages is concerned and who is eligible for reparations, I just want to bring to your attention that when we are all born as a Black African American, it has to be stated on the birth certificate that we are Black or Negro or whatever the case was and still is, that maybe if we pull all of those records of who is Black or Negro or African American, maybe that's who the reparations should belong to. People who don't want to be acknowledged as Black or African American or Negro, who didn't want to put that on their birth certificate because of whatever the case is, I believe that that would be a good way of tracking who reparations belongs to. And I yield my mic. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Stephen, next caller.
And before we go to the next 29. caller, just everyone in the in-person audience, make sure to quiet down. So that we can hear the virtual callers. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Moore. Stephen?
Line 29, please go ahead. 29.
Good morning. Good morning, Chair Moore, Vice Chair Brown. My name is Josiah Williams. And also to the esteemed task force, my name is Josiah Williams. I'm an organizer with Just Equitable California, known as CJEC, and also the American Redress Coalition of California, or Bay Area team. Today I will be speaking as an individual. I actually have wrote down some things, but I just, instead I'm just going to make some comments based off of some of the things stated today. First thing is, we know who we are. So we know who we are. So, you know, there is different justice that is needed for other groups of people. You know, for the indigenous, for, you know, racism as, you know, completely for everyone, right? Those can be completely separate bills. There's opportunities to be, you know, where people can come together, they can create those bills, they can put their minds together, right? And then they can present it, and there will be support behind it. But what we're doing today is very specific. We're talking about the people that built this house, that built this nation, right? And so we need to repair the foundation. We're the foundation of the United States. We need to prepare the foundation. And so some of the things that's being said is like having a home and trying to paint the walls and fix the windows. But if you don't fix the foundation, then America is still going to be how it is. We need to fix the descendants of U.S. chattel slavery first, in my opinion, right? And so there is justice that is needed for everyone else as well. Create those bills. please. All those are different ideas. Create them, and you will get support behind them. But let's not try to colonize this effort right here, right? We've already experienced that. That's how we got here in the first place, right? And so we need justice. This is a righteous cause that we're involved in right now. You know, and I want to applaud the task force for coming to the decision to support the eligibility for the defendants in U.S. Child Slavery. I know that there's some who, you know, didn't agree with that initially. Hopefully they've gotten over it by now so we can just focus on achieving our, you know, our righteous cause and justice for the defendants. In addition, I wanted to point out that cash payment is necessary, in my opinion. And anyone who is against it, I think they should lead by example by, you know, coming together with all their checks, putting it together, right? And then just being paid in programs instead. Now, there should be programs, but there must be cash, right? Because that's how we live, right? That's how we care about bills. And it actually gives us the opportunity to choose something that we've been denied of for all these years, right? So lastly, I want to go over AB 2296. That was presented by Assemblymember John Sawyer. You know, and I don't know what was in his mind when he initially created the bill, but to me, it almost looked like someone breaking into someone's house, right?
Excuse me, sir. Thank you so much for your comments. I hate to interrupt you in the middle of your sentence, but your time is up. Stephen, our next speaker.
Excuse me, just one moment. Yeah. The chair has given me the privilege of saying this. Since I'm the senior most member of this task force, I beg your indulgence. I'm not pointing fingers at anyone. I'm not talking about anyone. I'm just talking about what I'm talking about. We deserve respect. And I hope something to stop the situation of the noise that's outside. We're dealing with a serious matter. So we cannot go any further with this kind of an ambience over this August body. Well, go out there and ask them to be quiet.
Okay, next. Thank you for being patient. Folks who are here today, we really appreciate it. This is an important issue, so thank you. Bear with us. I will proceed with our next caller. Stephen?
How many callers do we have? We don't know.
We don't know how many. So we'll have to watch the time, Chair Moore.
Hello? Hello, can you hear me?
Stephen?
Can I see her?
Hello. Hi. We can barely hear you. Would you do us a big favor and speak up really, really loud this morning?
Okay. My name is Michelle Wallace, and I'm a fifth generation descendant to California.
There you go.
I came here. I just want to say thank you to the committee. I'm 62 years old. I never thought I would see anything like this. It brings tears to my eyes, but I just want us to all have a meeting of the minds, because this has always led to our destruction when we get to arguing amongst ourselves. I want to thank the speakers. I want to thank everyone that came forward, and I would just like to advocate for some permanent solutions. I would like whatever found to be the seeds of our descendants, of our ancestors. Let this be something that will last for generations and generations, as far as land, as far as education. Let's go back to the theme of Martin Luther King and them that let us know that education sets us free. It just gives people a lot of money for what? They always have traps set up to take the money back as soon as they give it to you. So I would just like something long-lasting that my grandchildren and great-grandchildren can benefit from this historical moment in our yield.
Hello, thank you.
All righty, our next question comes.
Perfect, thank you, Stephen.
Our next comment comes from line 30. Please go ahead, 30.
Good morning, everyone. Can you hear me?
Can you speak up a little bit louder? Those people who have headsets, you definitely will need to speak up louder.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Please go ahead.
Thank you. My name is Erin Jones, and I'm an academic coordinator at Community Coalition. I currently serve historically marginalized youth in South LA with the goal of creating and sustaining a college-going culture. And in short, I work to close the education gaps that affect our children. I am a descendant of American chattel slavery, and I'm a third-generation Californian after my grandmother fled domestic violence in Atlanta, Georgia. My domestic partner is a second-generation Haitian-American man and first-generation to live in California, and by the current ruling of the task force, even though his direct and traceable ancestors were enslaved by the French instead of the British and in Haiti rather than America, he would not be considered eligible for reparations. Even though slavery is slavery, no matter where it occurred, and both of our families currently face the same levels of oppression and discrimination. Even though I'm African-American and he is Haitian-American, we share a child, a household, and a passion for social justice. And honestly, the lack of the eligibility for our brothers and sisters, put simply, it hurts. So I'm urging the task force to reconsider eligibility based solely on African-American lineage connected to the United States slavery or free black people living here prior to the end of the 19th century. And I do think it is better to base reparations on African-American lineage than pro-discrimination and other forms of racial oppression, as white supremacy has truly affected all black people in California and throughout the whole entire United States. So this current standing is not only divisive on a wide range scale, but in my personal life, it's very divisive in my household. So therefore, I encourage you all to establish a more inclusive basis for eligibility and not further divide black people across America and California. Now, we never will. We don't know exactly the pain our ancestors endured, but we do know many forms of racial discrimination still impact all of us today. So I really do hope our personal stories and communities really impact you all as members of this task force and help you to further consider incorporating our community's lives and futures in your decisions. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I just want to make an announcement. Unless we relocate, which I don't know at this time is possible, I just want to say we're just going to have to adjust. This is a museum for children, and children are rightfully excited to learn about science. So, you know, it is what it is, and we just have to keep calm and carry on. So.
Yes. Thank you. Great words. And then also, I think we only have 3 callers on the line remaining, so we'll proceed. Stephen, our next speaker.
Line 20, please go ahead. Yes, can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you
speak
be heard?
A little
Please
bit?
Speak up.
Yes.
Speak up loud.
Yes. Copy that. My name is Matthew Morris. I am currently the operations manager for the Institute for Leadership and Professional Development, headquartered in Riverside, California. IFLPD is a veteran and black-owned company. Mm-hmm. I'm also a descendant of United States military sergeant and former heavyweight champion of the world, Joe Lewis. I'm from Hawthorne, California, and I've lived in California most of my 30 years of life. This bill isn't about restorative justice for African-Americans. It's for Americans. When Floyd Mayweather represented his country in the Olympics, he wasn't called the African-American fighter. He was called the American fighter, just like Roy Jones Jr. and Joe Lewis before him. Joe Lewis's victory over Max Schmeling wasn't called an African-American victory. It was called an American victory. The headlines read, America's Joe Lewis versus the Axis powers. We cannot be American only when it suits you. America is an ideal that all humans can be a part of something greater if only they can come to common ground with their neighbors, regardless of color or creed or point of origin, they can enjoy the privileges of being American. We cannot be a country of hypocrisy. You cannot have your cake and eat that very same cake as well, meaning that my lineage should not disqualify me from being American when it is profitable. Were the descendants of Japanese immigrants any less American when you gave them reparations for internment camps? How about the slave owners when they were given reparations for owning slaves, even when they fought against America just to keep their free labor? How can you still be an American worthy reparations and commit treason against that same country? I ask, can you tell the story of America without the contribution of Frederick Douglass, MLK, Joe Lewis, or Dred Scott?
to the opposition. This is not about slave owners long gone. This is about the intentional harm that was done to Americans on purpose of the very grounds of how we look, but also where our grandfathers and grandmothers came from. Even after slavery was abolished, these people were accepted by state, local, and federal systems that were meant to protect and empower all Americans. We were simply excluded from those resources. People of the public and this task force, accountability is useless without a plan of action. Reparations is that plan of action for diversity, equity, and inclusion for all Americans. All we are asking is that you don't continue to leave us out of the restorative justice that was given to other Americans but was intentionally done to them. In the words of General Benjamin O. Davis, the privileges of being an American belong to those brave enough to fight for them. My family fought bravely for the country during times of war. Are you brave enough to fight for your fellow Americans now? Ethical behavior should not be optional only when it suits the guilty. There can be no delay in giving reparations to the affected. And with that, I close.
Thank you. Perfect timing. Okay. Our next speaker, please.
Line 37, please go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
We can hear you. Please speak loudly.
That's great. Good morning, everyone. My name is Simone Baptiste. I'm a filmmaker, activist, and Pan-African reparations advocate. I want to thank everyone this morning for the spirited debate, and I'd like to thank the task force for taking on the difficult job to study reparations for Black Californians. However, like many people this morning, I want to talk about eligibility. This task force held a vote on eligibility that was lineage-based, and that needs to be reversed. It was simply irresponsible, regardless of the intent. In this report, it states that one-third of the U.S. Black population are foreign-born. So we're talking about erasing one-third of the Black community from this decision. I believe that reparations should have a Pan-African approach. I believe that Black immigrants, alike with Black descendants of American slaves, have experienced the effects of white supremacy in this country. I don't believe in excluding anyone from the Black community. And also in this report, the statistics that bolster the need for reparations, like talking about how Black Californians over-index in the incarcerated population, or how Black Californians are over-indexed in the unhoused population, that includes Black immigrants. So I don't want to include Black immigrants only when it's convenient to bolster your statistics, but instead we should be including them in the distribution of reparations overall. And I'm in support of extending the study. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your comments. Stephen, next speaker.
Line 45, we can hear you. We just asked that you speak up.
Sure. Good morning, everyone. My name is Joseph, I want to thank, first of all, and applaud the body for deciding that reparations should be lineage-based, which is only appropriate. Slavery and racism are two completely different things. Also, according to reports, only 6% of slaves from Africa were brought to North America, and the rest were shipped to the Caribbean and South America. And for sources, you can go to PBS.com, College of Charleston, The Root, which I believe is ran by Caribbeans themselves. Many of us so-called Blacks are already here in the Americas, and that's how many of us have traced our lineage to Indian tribes, which again proved that many of us were already here before the Europeans. And if just common sense dictates, how else would we be able to farm the land and form rebellion if we were not already here and familiar with the land? So in conclusion, only descendants of those who were enslaved should have a say in reparations. That's bottom line. People who chose to come here voluntarily because they have a conflicting interest. As the two callers back stated, she comes from a mixed lineage. So that's why she is torn, and that's why she believes that it shouldn't be lineage-based, because her conflict of interest is that part of her lineage does not come from here. So obviously she wants to include those people, but those people, that side of her family, did not experience American slavery here on this soil. So, Caribbean and African immigrants have a history of here, and then working against us, as we can see throughout this process, and even before the task force was created, as many so-called Black and Caribbean immigrants have said that we don't need reparations. Next, more importantly, it was us, the descendants of Americans of black slavery, who fought for civil rights and made it possible for black immigrants to come here in the first place. Black immigrants need to focus on fixing their home country and getting reparations from their respective colonizers and stay out of our reparations conversation. Now, regardless of how a person might spend their reparations, the debt is owed and must be paid. No other group is scrutinized for how they might spend their reparations money except for us, and this is yet another form of discrimination. Although California was admitted as a free state, as a previous caller said, there's still much evidence that the state of California aided, abetted, and turned a blind eye to slavers that came to California to capture people who fled here, in addition to testimony laws and more, which prevented black people from using the legal system. And the ACLU of Northern California has lots of data on that. As others have stated, there isn't any need to delay this process any further. The previous caller also mentioned the word divisive. There's nothing divisive about the descendants wanting to be repaired. There's nothing divisive about that. In conclusion, again, cash reparations only for black descendants of American slavery sooner than later, please. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Stephen, I believe that's our last caller, so thank you for your assistance this morning, and we're going to go back in person. So we will resume with Ms. Carolyn Allen, who has requested an accommodation, so she will be next.
Thank you very much. I'm retired professor Carolyn Allen Roper, and these are my sisters, retired professors Joyce Faye Allen Hamilton and Janelle Allen. I just want to thank the panel, the attorneys, the honorable legislators, and the professors and the psychologists. We need to approach it from four. I've been at this culture diversity for a long time. Let me give you a little something. I was mentored by Dr. Maurice Jackson. Do you know who he is? At UTR, was there 53 years ago for my undergrad and grad. He was the first PhD at UCLA. He was mentored by Ron Takaki, and the late Ron Takaki, and I was mentored under him because I'm the only one that changed minority relations, my sociology 141 course, to race and ethnic studies. I'm responsible for that. Ron Takaki said he couldn't do it because they had to do American culture, domestic culture. Well, what I really want to tell you is that we've been robbed of our heritage. This is one way to heal, but it's not going to solve the problem because we have post-traumatic stress syndrome. Our great-great-grandpa was mustered in the first Kansas Volunteers, way before the 54th. Dr. Lewis, you would appreciate that. He was mustered in January 13, 1863. He was maimed, decapitated. May 18, 1863. Let you digest that. He was mixed of blood, Choctaw and black. That's who they let be to go into the first Kansas. Then there was the second Kansas. By December 1863, it became the 79th colored troops. And then Colonel Matthews, who he served under, went to Sherwood, Missouri, and burned the town down. He was black man. Our next grandpa, his son, was killed by the Klan. They spooked his horse. He was a deacon, Reverend Amos. My grandpa was the vice president of the National Baptist Convention. We come from Magnolia, Mississippi. Yes, Mississippi, the headquarters of SNCC, McComb. And we are products of that. Our mom just died last year. She was a civil rights activist. She left that lynching, and she died shy of her 98th birthday, and she wanted to be here, but she left it on tape that please do the reparations. Came out to California following my father, my aunt, uncle, teachers in Willowbrook. They couldn't teach in LA Unified. 1946.
give you some history. We live that history. We still live at 851 East 73rd Street.
Ms. Roper, thank you so much for your comments. I hate to interrupt you in the middle of your sentence, but thank you.
Student debt, cancel that, and do something with GI Bill.
Thank you.
Have one for California.
Thank you so much for your comments this morning. Chair Morris, can we do a check-in?
Yeah, we're going to do a timekeeping. So it's 10:30 right now. We have two items on our agenda. Before lunch, which begins at 11:45, actually three items on the agenda. We have to approve the April minutes. There is a discussion and potential action item on task force member reflection on report one, and then we have discussion and potential action item on the subpoena advisory committee. They actually have a report that they're sharing. So I want to cut public comment for now. Okay, so we'll just do one. No, that's fine. Thank you. We'll do one more, and then we'll go to task force member reflections. It may not take the entire 30 minutes. If it doesn't, we can return back to public comment, but for now, you'll be the last one.
Thank you very much for making the accommodations. I'm Starla Tarleton with AMH Consulting. I create spiritual and secular technologies to help transform stress in these pandemic times. These pandemic times have been the inception for our enslavement here on this continent, all right? I utilize music, sociology, hypnotherapy, and human development. I've had clients from Compton to Malibu. My mission started when Martin Luther King was killed. They called me playing the trumpet to help transform the people, the kids, so they would not riot. What we need now is we need to step into our superpowers. We need to step into the zero-point zone of infinite possibilities, because the enemy plays the game of infinite fear and infinite anger through infinite division, so that we fight amongst ourselves. All of us want and need and require and demand the reparations that are way overdue. However, we need to stop the infighting and breathe and move into that peace. I work with peace and transformation, transforming the chaos to peace. Then we can go and create the future realities and transform them as our ancestors did into present time reality. Peace codes, downloads, transform them now. Breathe unity in so that all the different divisions and the way this should be done and the way that should be done and no, we can't do this, keeps us in that internal enemy, which is the post-traumatic slave syndrome, internalized. We transform that by going into unity within and unity without, creating the peace where we can think straight without all the cortisone rushing through our bodies. We can work into a middle zone, a neutral zone, and work with our brothers and sisters, fathers and mothers, children, to create solutions we don't know yet, because we've got to step into the miracle zone in order to create that. The question is, are we willing to do that and make it practical? Starla Tarleton, Angel Music Healing, AMH Consulting, Peace Code Download, Heart. We need to refurbish our hearts and heal through God's divine power that is within us. Our ancestors were freed of the slaves into the dimensions they were because they tapped into the God-anointed superpowers within and united with each other. Let us do that.
Thank you so much for your calming words this morning.
So what
we're going to do is move on with the agenda. Then we're probably going to have extra time after the task force members have an opportunity to reflect on report one.
You don't think public comment should be priority?
Yeah.
You don't think the people's voice should be priority, at least in this exception?
Yeah, we're going to return to you, so just let's just have a minute so we can move towards
Have a minute.
Okay. Okay. How many more people are on the agenda?
We have about 12 more people.
Okay. Okay, all 12 people on the list can give public comment.
All right.
Go ahead.
If we're going to go in the order that we agreed, the next speaker, if you don't mind, would be Pete W. We'll get to the two of you, absolutely. Thank you so much for being patient. Oh, Pete's gone? Okay. The next speaker was Gregory, who's giving his time to Big Money Grip.
Okay, you're like your little live growth.
Big Money. Big Money's gone too? Okay.
You think you need to know everything?
Go ahead, Fur. I'm okay, and then please go ahead. Thank you.
Okay, my story is a little bit more like the hurricane, and to, you know, say to Rachel Sora, you know, don't be like Sylvester in the time of the first empire of, he was one of the first empires back in the day being a super coon. But what I'd like to say is that I was also a victim of, like what they talk about, McLaren Hall and stuff. I'm 65 years old. I've been falsely imprisoned at the age of 6 years old to about 12 years old. All right. And I've still been a victim of police brutality, railroaded. And so I was also with Mr. Peoples and all that for to say that people my age shouldn't be able to have reparation and stuff like that. It's crazy, you know. I've been through a lot. I'm still going through stuff for this, about this court system and everything. I'm also ex-fighter. And I can tell by, you know, people being depressed and all that when I'm training folks now, if they have ADHD and if they smoke weed and stuff or whatever, you can tell through the training and stuff because they're not like that typewriter you get over there. You type in 100 words a minute. And so through depression and stuff, it's hard to focus. And so I believe that we all should have reparations. And I'm also born in Kingfisher, Oklahoma. And so when you talk about people being Indians and other things and how they just put stuff on your birth certificate being Negro, there's no such thing as a Negro or all that other stuff. They just want to name folks. You know, white folks have always have done that. You know, want to name who, what country you are from, and you know. So my thing is that I want to give my money to Big Money Griff, so he can speak a little bit more eloquently than I am, because I'm a little nervous up here when I get to speaking. But if I was other things, I'd probably be all right. But so my thing is that you know. I think that we have all different types. I think like on my father's side, you know, from African descent. On my mother's side, it's Indian, you know, from Creek Indian, you know. And so, all right. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for being patient this morning as well. Next, we have Dr. Truth Bay. Truth Bay.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
So I am a descendant of slaves. My ancestors on the good ship Desire, 1638, have my ancestors also on the census of 1865. But my greatest ancestor is Jean-Baptiste Point du Sable. As a Haitian, born and raised here in this so-called here Americas, as a descendant of slaves, I find it appalling that especially as a black woman born and raised in California, that we don't have the equity. That many of you that are sitting on that panel as a task force are the same ones that have not given equity to black businesses in South LA. So I'm going to start off with why we need reparations. It's obvious. I want to start off with the BSCC grant, Board and State Community Corrections grant, Reginald Jones Sawyer, that you are over. We applied for $1 million in January 2019. Your chief of staff, Saladeka Smith, gave us a runaround, and eventually you gave us zero. Just like many of these black-faced politicians, like James Clyburn, that says, I created H.R. 40. What you want me to do, pass it? Or yes, dummy, we want you to pass it. That's what you're there for. We're tired of us being the data, the breadwinners for incarceration, homelessness, DCFS, but yet we can't be at the equity table to build housing. So I have to be told on Vermont and Swanson that I'm not a Hispanic contractor, so therefore I cannot get the $1.7 million that we applied for correctly like every other racial nonprofit organization. We didn't squandered $250 million in COVID money like Amy Brock did in Feed the Future in Minnesota, right? So when we are getting the backlash of not getting the equity and we say we need reparations, that's what we need reparations. It's a specific group of people, descendants of slaves that have a distinct history. We're not mixing that. And you guys understand, for me as a Haitian, I'm not even welcomed amongst my own black Americans. We are being treated as less than, but you got corporations sitting in Haiti right now when we were the first Haitian slave country to be free, and we're paying the price for it now. So we owe our own reparations from the United States and France. So we want reparations according to the equity that I applied for. The Kingdom Warriors Foundation is a foundational black American organization. We apply for housing. We are homeless navigators. We help with outreach. As you see, LA is number one in homelessness. So as a FBA, we request the same equity as the start of reparations so we can help house black families who are sleeping in their cars, who are sleeping in their tents. Not everybody's a crackhead like some people like to say. You have lawyers, doctors. You have professionals that are tired of being treated less than simply because of our melanin. So Reginald Jones Sawyer, do right by the people and fund the organizations that you know. Karen Bass, too. I'm not interested in her being mayor. I want her as Congress to fix L.A.
Thank you so much for your comments. We really appreciate you taking your time coming out today and sharing with us. Your comments are being recorded. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We would like to call the next three speakers up to the mic in this order. Ms. Carolyn, TC, and Chris Lodgen. Can you please approach the mic in that order? Thank you so much. You may begin.
Good morning. My name is...
Raise the mic a little bit.
Raise it up. Good morning. My name is Carolyn Essex. I was born and raised in California. And I want to say thank you to the task force. I read the interim report. I read your bios. I'm familiar with Dr. Cheryl Grills. I appreciate all of your work. I thought the report was extraordinary. The language that was used the language that we are used to hearing. Generational. Black Americans, Californians, delineation, making sure that the people that have been harmed by slavery are compensated. I appreciate those words. I have questions, though, and I wonder, can I ask questions of you about the task force? I represent a group of people, we're all grassroots activists. We want to know why the task force is being extended for another year. So for public comment, you can't ask questions, you can't respond, but you can just give us comments.
All right.
So going back, I do represent and align myself with a group of people who want to know why. I have my ideas. And I think the time is necessary, but maybe not the whole year. And then another thing, we want to know what is the next step. Are we going to talk about valuation of the bill? And is there a bill being written right now? Are we ahead of the game? You know what I'm saying? But those are our concerns. But I did want to say that I'm not going to preach to the choir. We all are black here. We all know what we have been through. You would not be on this panel if you didn't have it in your heart to fight for your family and your community. And so you deserve our respect. But I want to say this. Low information makes people vulnerable to misinformation. And so if we could get more information, that would be great. More meetings like this would be wonderful. We just want to be a part of this. My father was a disabled veteran, and I watched him struggle. I watched him have to go get a surgery that was experimental. He was a veteran. He fought for every single benefit. It was very difficult and hard, and we were chased home from our white Christian school.
I'm so sorry. As a 5-year-old, interrupt you in the middle of your sentence, but thank you so much for your valuable comments this morning. We really appreciate you taking the time to come out today. Thank you. Greetings and salutations to the task force and everyone in the room. My name is Tis Lene Prescott, pronounced Solane in its native language of Africa, native to the Zantu tribe and people of South Africa. I am African by way of the American slave trade system and American by birth. In doing the work to know who I know that I am a descendant of the Limba tribe and the great people of Sierra Leone and the Mbundu tribe, people of Angola. By way of New Haven, Connecticut, and the Durham, Goldsboro, and Granville counties, North Carolina. I live in Los Angeles, California. I'm in the arts and entertainment community. I've worked on the representation side of the business at talent agencies, acting as an agent of change with a focus on supporting the telling of Black people's stories. I am currently part of the casting community, where I ensure that there is accuracy and truth associated with the choosing of actors of all stories told, and especially those where we are seen cast and represented, highlighted, and leading. Reparations is justice. Art and entertainment is a means to share, collectively come together, and ensure our future benefit and continue to represent the beautiful, strong, peaceful, and resilient people we have become, show our ancestors, like my kin and Howard University grad, Chadwick Boseman, a fellow descendant of family with ancestral DNA, also tracing back to the Limba people of Sierra Leone. Our stories are worthy of being told, and the process for which reparations is distributed deserves its thoroughly attentive space and place in the helm of American history's garment. The historic nature for which this land was started is of utmost importance to the history of our nation, and so reparations, damages, costs, compensation, justice should also be of utmost importance and a top priority to the descendants of the enslaved in our futures. Thank you. Thank you so much this morning.
My check. Can y'all hear me? My check. Put your hand up if you are the descendant of U.S. slavery. If you are the descendant of U.S. slavery, put your hand up. Keep your hand up and say reparations. 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 Descendants of U.S. slavery, the people behind me that built this country, that's who reparations is for. You already decided that. You already said that. That's who it's for. That's the first one. The second thing is, when you are developing this reparations plan over the next year, as you're going to do, we want cash money. We want money. We want money. We want money. Income. Cash. Wealth. We want it. It was stolen. We worked for it. It's owed. Last thing I'm going to say,
I know we over time. I want to give a big shout out and love to the chair, to the vice chair. Please put your hands together for the chair and the vice chair. We don't need no extension of this task force, Reggie. Stop playing. You know, and I know what this is about. You don't want me to tell these people what I know. You don't want, you're absolutely right. You don't want me to tell these people what I know and what this is really about and who this is really about. We don't need no extension of this. And we don't need no changes so that people can be taken off this task force. I know what you're trying to do. It ain't going to work.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. Let's call up the next three speakers in order. This should be Mr. J. And then Akili, if you could come stand in line.
Okay,
and then Ingo. All right. Okay.
Sweet, how you doing? I think.
Please go ahead.
I think what my man just said was kind of right to the point. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But yeah, I sit in line, so it only takes 2 minutes.
It's good. No,
yeah.
You're good. Thank you.
The point I'm trying to make, and I think the point that all these people are trying to make behind us is that, like, the things you see on the streets in L.A. and not just L.A. in the country, it's mostly, like, black people in unfortunate situations. And this is not people from Africa. Usually when Africans come here nowadays, they usually come with a nice group of people to take care of them and look out for them. And while we still are looked at as trash, we're still incarcerated every day, we're still shot by the police, we're still just, and another thing, mental health, the reason you see so many black people with mental health, it's not because we're crazy, it's because our DNA know what happened to us. It's in our DNA. And so these reparations is answers to those frustrations that you see people expressing. And reparations, I'm not the smartest person, I promise. I never pretend to be. But reparations, I think the definition is like paying somebody to something that's owed. And to be owed for something, you have to do some work. And my people was in those fields. My people were slaves. Like, you know what I'm saying? And when I say my people, I mean descendants of African. Our people was the ones that was in those fields. And so the word reparations goes to the people that did those work for nothing. So, I mean, that in itself explains who this belongs to. And on the flip side of that, it's not just about giving black people money. You know what I mean? Black people need the foundation to build. We don't even understand money because we ain't had enough. Like, we don't even know how money works. So you have to give a person enough time and enough money to understand how money works. And let's be honest, the American will benefit from it because, you know, we're going to spend it. You know what I mean? So let's be honest. Like, this is for us, and we shouldn't actually – I don't even understand why we're talking about it, honestly. So thank you for your time, and I'm out of here.
Thank you. We have five speakers. If you could please line up, it should be Jay, Akili, Ingo, Tiffany, and Kenny. Those are the five people who are remaining for in person if you are here. Only those folks. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. My name is Jay. I run a black media site named 60. If you see this book, this is 13 chapters of what this nation did to our people, the atrocities we faced. But what we have to remember is it was so successful because there's black people in our community that will sell us out. And some of those people are sitting right there trying to compromise a reparations task force panel. As Brother Chris talked about, Reggie Jones Sawyer put forth a bill which is going to allow them to remove members from the task force at will. So who do you think is going to go? The people that are for lineage-based reparations, the people that don't want the money to trickle down to all these groups. We see that time and time again, you create all these community organizations and white people run them. They give white people millions of dollars and it doesn't trickle down to us. So remember, there are traitors in our midst. And until we do something about that, we're never going to get a good outcome. Every single one of you up there, Lisa Holder, Cheryl Grills, we heard you. You tried to give our reparations to other people. And I'm telling you, it's a new day. We're not tolerating this anymore. This is our life. Stop asking us to respect these people that will sell us out. I have no respect, and you have no respect for these people. Stop having respect for our enemy. That's it.
Thank you, Jay. Okay, the next speaker should be Akili. Please go ahead. Thank you, everyone.
Good morning, panel. My name's Akili. I'm with the Fannie Lou Hamer Institute. And I, like all black people in this room, are descendants of the enslaved. All of us are. I want to put forth a position for an inclusive reparation that benefits all of us because all of us have suffered. How do you address,
how do you address the
wealth gap? How do you address?
Excuse me, please, can you let the speaker speak? Thank you so much. Thank you.
How do you address the wealth gap? How do you address medical apartheid? How do you address all of the damage, hurt, and harm that's been done to black people in this country since us being here? How do we have an inclusive approach? How do we make sure that we are all in as opposed to some of us are in? Some of us. How, if you don't provide the resources for us to do the ancestral tracking that we need to do to be able to prove if we are eligible or not for reparations, will it benefit us all? I am recalling on you to look at all of us. You can prioritize us if you'd like, but how do we address our common interests, our common concerns, and our common conditions? How do we do that if we are simply saying some of us can track our lineage and maybe the rest of us can't? So I call on you to start with an inclusive, holistic, and comprehensive approach to reparations. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your comments today. Okay, the last three speakers.
Chair Brown.
Chair Brown.
Okay.
How are you doing, committee?
Just one moment, please. 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 We have done a wonderful job thus far. Now, as brothers and sisters, if we really respect each other, just chill. You had your opportunity to speak. Let others speak. Thank you. Let's hear those speakers.
Thank you. Last three speakers. This should be a key. Ingo. Thank you. Go ahead.
How are you doing, Task Force? Thank you for the work you've done so far, the ones that have worked for us. Thank you, Task Force. Thank you for the work you've done so far for us, the ones who have done it, truthfully. And I want to first say that that last brother was right. We do need to figure out a way that's more inclusive to properly and easily identify who is who are descendants of actual African slaves in America. The numbers. I like clarity on the numbers. Are we looking at 1 million plus each person? Because that's what I think is at the least should be. You know what I'm saying? The federal, I believe we should have, I'll be quick. A few points in our reparations, should definitely be included. We should have a federal local black business grant and training for people to have businesses in their local black neighborhood so that we can create an economic black bubble. Just like they have in Chinatown and Koreatown and Japantown, you know, just like, you know, when that one family had the beach, it was taken from them because they started developing black hotels and black businesses and black gift shops and stuff, you know, that would have developed into an Africa town by this time, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah, we need to be, the federal government needs to also do that as well as give us the money. And then also we need to have each person should have personal finance / investment training, maybe and perhaps in some kind of way, whereas we can create yet again an African economic bubble where we can have like, you know, say like African Americans being the sellers of import goods that are from Africa that are processed in Haiti. You see that triangle that we got? Because that's how the Koreans do it. You can't go into a black hair care shop without being owned by Koreans. You know what I'm saying? They've monopolized that. We need to monopolize something like that. Maybe like Ghana with the chocolate. Because Ghana cut Sweden off with that chocolate. They almost had a heart attack. Okay? And then, let me see, Real Black History School programs. So the youth can grow up right with the right mindset. And not just, you know their version of what our black history is, you know. And we need also, we need laws and some kind of black protective law enforcement, maybe like a black, I don't know, at state level, something like a black National Guard, because we're going to say, okay, guys, you're going to give us to us, and then we're going to depend on you to protect us, too. That didn't work too well at Rosewood. It didn't work too well at Black Wall Street. It didn't work too well at Harlem.
Thank
you know what
so
I'm saying?
Much.
And last but not least, groups like the NFAC, where brothers is going around, including me, making sure that
we
were not getting smashed on by the cops.
Thank you so
and
much.
And then Grandmaster Jay got put in jail.
Thanks a lot for your comments this morning. They are being recorded. Next.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
All right,
you.
So good morning, Task Force. My name is Tiffany Quarles. I am born and raised in California, raised in South Central Los Angeles. Reggie Jones Sawyer is my assembly member, and I must say I'm very disappointed in you. First of all, this venue is horrible. You should have kept it in the church. Okay, I just wanted to say that. And secondly, AB 2296 is a betrayal of black Americans. We need reparations now. We've been waiting for 400 years. We do not need an extension. Secondly, I want to speak on eligibility. My grandmother immigrated here from Panama, a black immigrant woman. Black immigrants are not owed reparations by the U.S. government. I'm tired of people bringing it up. Period. You are not a black immigrant. You now speak for black immigrants. My family who immigrated here, they came on their own free will. It is not the same as my family who was enslaved here. I don't understand why you keep bringing this up. We've been deliberating this for 10 months. The Community Coalition, they were not here. They weren't here when the bill was being put through the Assembly or the Senate. Now you want to show up trying to change the eligibility, and that is wrong. Dr. Shirley Weber, who wrote the bill, told you her intent that the bill is for black Americans who descend from U.S. slavery, and you are disrespecting her. You are disrespecting the advocates who worked on this bill from the beginning. You made your decision, stick with it. If black immigrants want reparations, they are well within their rights to file their own claims, to put forth their own movement, but you need to respect black Americans who descend from U.S. slavery. And I'm saying that as a descendant of black immigrants, and black immigrants need to stand in solidarity with black Americans instead of trying to be a part of it, ask how you can help. You are here because of what black Americans did. This is not about you. And I just wanted to remind you of that, especially Dr. Rills, Lisa Holder, John Tamaki, and Reggie Jones Sawyer, who do not respect black Americans. So I'm putting you all on blast and saying as a descendant of immigrant, you are wrong. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your comments. Okay, our everyone.
What she said.
This is our last speaker of this morning in person. Please go ahead.
All right, greetings to the task force. Reparations right goddamn now. I am a descendant of black American slaves from Houma, Louisiana, and from Dallas, Texas. I'm a fourth generation Californian here. My family came here in the 1930s. Ever since we came here, they've been victimized by whites and Latinos. Okay? Illegal immigrants right now are being treated better than black Americans in the state of California. They're being prioritized over me, and that's a goddamn shame. We need reparations right now. Let me get on my damn thing. Sorry about screaming. But anyway, just right now I've seen groups of children walk in here
for, what do you call it, field trips and stuff. I didn't see not one goddamn black child walk in here to come see this damn science center. That's a fucking problem. Every time we're around, I'm around California, the majority of black people are on Skid Row in Watts where I live, and we're not doing well at all. You owe us now. And the second thing, I'll be goddamn if a goddamn Nigerian, if a Haitian, if a Dominican, get in on my reparations claim because they've been completely hostile to foundational black American freedmen. I'm going to go ahead and end right there.
Thank you. So thank you all for your public comments this morning. We're done with the in-person and call-in for today, but remember you can show up tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. And also, as always, you can submit comments at any time to reparationstaskforce@dlj.ca.gov. Thank you so much for coming out. And you're, of course, invited and welcomed and encouraged to stay for the rest of the day for the meeting. Chair Moore, I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you, Ms. Martin-Walton. If you can turn the volume up for the mic, that would be great. Thank you so much. So the next item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes. The minutes from the April Task Force meeting were sent to Task Force members ahead of time. Members of the public can also look at those minutes at our website. And so at this time, I'm asking if there are any questions, comments, or corrections from the Task Force members regarding the April minutes. Hearing no questions, comments, or suggestions, is there a motion to accept the minutes?
Second.
It has been properly moved and seconded that the April minutes be approved as presented. Is there any discussion on the matter? Hearing no discussion, I will now turn to Parliamentarian Johnson so that she can call a roll for this vote.
Madam Chair, thank you. Before we proceed, would you please identify who made the motion? Thank you.
Yes. Senator Bradford made the motion, and Vice Chair Brown seconded the motion.
Thank you so much. I will begin with the roll with Chair Moore.
Aye.
Vice Chair Brown?
Aye.
Member Bradford?
Aye.
Member Grill?
Aye.
Member Jones-Sawyer. Thank you. Member Lewis. Member Holder. Member Monica Montgomery-Steff. And Member Tamaki. Madam Chair. There were 8 members present and voting. There are 8 ayes and 0 nays.
Thank you, Parliamentarian Johnson. There are 8 ayes and 0 nays. The ayes have it, and so the April minutes are approved as presented. Before we go to our next agenda item, I just want to take the time again to thank members of the public for showing up. And thank you for sharing your testimony via the public comment period. Thanks. All right. So the next item on the agenda is a discussion and potential action item, task force member reflections on report 1. So as members of the public are aware, the task force issued or publicized a 500-page interim report June 1 of this year that catalogs the atrocities against the African-American community on a local, state, and federal level. And so this time, we're going to take just some moments if any task force members have any reflections on the report. And I'll just have some brief statements and first state my personal gratitude, but on behalf of the task force, gratitude towards the California Department of Justice Civil Rights Division, the attorneys who wrote this report and spent hours and hours of research on this report even before the Reparations Task Force was actually in panel. I want to thank also the California DOJ support staff for all of the work that you all contributed to making this report such a reality. And based on the public comment we heard, obviously a lot of members of the public appreciate this report. So I just wanted to thank you all. Vice Chair Brown, you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the task force. I wish to just say we should commend the staff for pulling together quite essential documents. This past August, I had the opportunity of taking to Ghana, West Africa, 50 young people and 50 elders, in order that they would be able to see ground zero of that evil Atlantic slave trade, and especially Cape Coast Castle, where our ancestors were stacked in dungeons for 4 months, before another 4 months stacked in slave ships across that Atlantic passage. The one thing that's significant is that I share a document with African faith leaders and politicians. And for them, it was a wow moment. And they had nothing but great applause for what we developed. It was a dream team. It was a collective. Finally, I want to say here, I know that language got a little saucy, but this just mirrors the pain, the pathos, the agony and anguish that we have been subjected to and are still victims of. So let us, like a pit bulldog, just hold our hope and not let go and not look back at any negative, contrary minds. But we must seize the moment for this generation that there will be a deliverance, and we will do more than just talk about freedom and justice and equality. But we will actualize it through our efforts, working together for those who were here in this nation at the scene of the crime of organized, systematized, legalized, and religiousized enslavement of our ancestors. That's what it's all about. And I thank God for your coming today and what you've had to say. And for one 81-year-old person who ain't tired yet, I'm going to stay in the fight. And one preacher until hell freezes over.
I'd also like to thank each and every one of my fellow task force members, because while the California DOJ civil rights attorney, right, did most of the research and writing, each of us advised the report from outline stage to final draft. So each of our footprints essentially is in this 500-page report. So I want to thank each and every one of you all for the work that we've done together as a collective. Does any other members of the task force like, okay, member Reggie Jones Sawyer?
So I just want to first thank everyone for being here today. It is so important, not just for me, but for the task force, to hear views from everyone. We are not a monolithic group, African American. We all think differently, we all have different ideas, but most important, the best ideas going forward as we come up with the final report that is due June 30th, 2023. The final report will be completed on time as originally envisioned by Dr. Shirley Weber, will not be delayed, and will be done on June 30th, 2023, whether the governor signs my bill or not. It will get done on time. Let me, it will get done on time and on budget. This report outlines why we need to have reparations. It is essential that we needed to do this preliminary report because that final report, and I would like to say those of you after we turned in the final report, who called our office, gave us their checking account routing number. Reparations will happen. I believe as long as we all rise together, because as it goes through the Assembly, the Senate, and the Governor's office, Mr. Bradford and I, we don't, and the Black Caucus, part of the voting block. We are people who are not in favor of what we, let me say that again, what we want. And we've got to convince them, because there's only 10 votes and you need 41 or 54 if we do an emergency or urgency clause so that we can get reparations done immediately. But out of 80 people, and I believe 27 on the other side and 21. That's our Herculean task to get other members of the Senate and the Assembly to get that done. So the process, after we turn in, and I'll say it again, on time, this final report with all the reparations, including what that dollar amount is or what it will be, will come out on June 30th, 2023, and please do not call us with your routing numbers again, because that is not an immediate. We have to get it through the Assembly and the Senate in 2024 so that we can do legislative and budgetary commitments. That is the purpose of why I wanted this group to stay together, not hold up the process of the report, but keep this group.
Quiet down, please.
Keep this group together so they can lobby our colleagues and other individuals who may not be in line and in lockstep with what we want to do. And there are several of them that are not going to be in line with what we want to do. Look, I sat and listened to everyone. Could you please give me the same courtesy?
Please.
Could you please give me the same courtesy? The McCain, the Bagley Keys.
Please quiet down. Please respect our task force member. He's speaking. Allow him the opportunity.
I wish I had a magic wand. I think the task force wish they had a magic wand that they could give you your checks tomorrow. But that is not the process. And that is not the case. We still have a long way to go, and we need to come together. As I said to another task force member earlier, who's probably in violation of Bagley King, that we need to come together as a task force, but ultimately as a community. We need to come together, and back to this report, you have no idea how many staff hours went into just writing this report. And to finalize this report, we're going to have to double that effort, and we're going to need your help to make sure whatever we want as a community is in here. And we need to be working together to move that forward, no matter what that is. Because at the end of the day, the final report that comes out, I'm going to say this again, because I keep hearing that everything's going to get delayed. I know I keep saying it again and again, but you need to understand, we're going to meet all the due dates that was set out and prescribed in the original bill by Dr. Shirley Weber. Thank you.
All right. So we're now, okay, quiet please. Thank you. No chanting for now. Thank you. Thank you. So now we're going to continue our conversation in the event that other task force members would like to reflect on the historic 500-page, 13-chapter interim report that the state of California released June 1 of this year, cataloging the harms against the African-American community on a local, state, and federal level. Member Bradford, excuse me.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, and I want to thank all the members who are here today, as well as the audience, for your comments. It's not fallen on deaf ears, but I would ask that we come with a more unified approach to this. It's not going to be one size fits all. We know we're not going to have a perfect document, but if you haven't read the 500 pages, I ask you to do that. It's probably the most comprehensive report you'll find in this nation dealing with where we are as a country as it relates to reparations. And it's a lot of work that went into that. And the DOJ staff deserves a round of applause for pulling this document together. The members of this task force deserve a round of applause, but as well as our staff in my office, as well as Reggie Jones Sawyer's office, who put a whole lot of work into this, and our legislative analyst office to help us craft the document that really spelled out the atrocities that happened in this country, as well as in California, even though we claim we weren't a slave state, but we adhered to all those horrible tenets of slavery here in California. So as Mr. Jones Sawyer stated, we have a final due next June, and that's going to be the roadmap for the legislature, because that's what's the major hurdle, making sure we can get 41 votes on his floor and 21 votes on my floor to get something passed. So that's where we're going to need your voices, your commitment, your, you know, really, us being unified to put pressure on the rest of the legislature to do the right thing, because we know it's folks right now who are going to be willing to hide behind this. We just hit a piece of legislation 2 months ago on the Senate floor, ACA 3, to remove the vestiges of involuntary slavery, servitude from our penal system, from our Constitution. We couldn't get 21 votes to do that. Okay? And some of those folks who wouldn't vote for it were Democrats. So you need to be aware, if they weren't willing to remove words that stated removing the vestiges of slavery and voluntary servitude from our Constitution for a state that didn't have slavery, don't think they're going to be quick to vote on this final product of this task force. So we need to stay unified. We need to be together. And we aren't going to agree, but we got to put forth a unified front. As one wise man once stated, we're all thinking alike and we're not thinking. So we want diverse opinions. We want oral communication. We want the public comment. But at the same time, every member on this task force is not going to agree. But that doesn't stand in the way of us putting forth a final product that we all can be proud of that gets us to our end goal of providing reparations in no matter what form that is, whether it's cash payments, whether it's down payments for new homes, no interest loans for small businesses. We're looking at all of that. And hopefully that final report will incorporate a little bit of everything that we've all talked about. So I'm excited about where we are, but it's still much work to be done.
Member Gross, you recommend.
Growing up, I thought people were born with their heads cocked because that's how they've always lived.
Yes, a little closer.
It's a little
you might want to be a little closer.
A little closer. Okay. So I want to start by, again, echoing my colleague,
comments about the important role that the department, the DOJ, has played in the preparation of this report. Having watched closely and talked a lot with them over the course of the preparation of the report, I don't think we have yet conveyed just how much work they actually did, as is the case for Assemblymember Joan Sawyer and Senator Bradford's staff. So we owe a debt to them. I simply want to say, in terms of our interim report, W.E.B. Du Bois wrote that the slave went free, stood a brief moment in the sun, then moved back again toward enslavement. Our interim report clearly lays out exactly what W.E.B. Du Bois stated. But even more so, we have to understand that this enslavement was not just of the body and our labor. It was also enslavement of the mind and control and manipulation of knowledge, information, values, and identity. So I want to say that when I look at reparations and what this reparations interim report, Task Force interim report is sharing for us, it's, for me in part, reparations is partly a decision between the choice, the willingness of taking the red pill or the blue pill. For those of you who know the matrix, you understand what I'm talking about. The red pill being the choice to learn a potentially unsettling or life-changing truth by taking this red pill, or remaining in contented ignorance with the blue pill. Now, what does this have to do with our report? The report is providing an opportunity to take the red pill, but people will not take that red pill on their own. We have a lot of work yet to do to educate the public and to pull in allies. This is not a time to be divisive in terms of potential allies in other racial and ethnocultural groups, and allies in terms of people who have a difference of opinion. So I want to encourage us to think about the long haul, that we have to educate the public and inform hearts, minds, and political will. And we have to be diligent and strategic and conscientious about what we do, how we do it, and when we do it.
Thank you so much. Member Holder?
I'd also like to uplift everything that the task force members have said so far and echo it as well. The DOJ worked tirelessly on this report. There are certain attorneys at the DOJ who gave up all of themselves to make this report what it is, and I'd like to give them an honorable mention. Attorney Si Yun Yang, Attorney Sarah Belton, worked tirelessly and were just tremendous. This report is what unites us all. This report is one of the most important deliverables this task force can give you, because this report is the truth, and the truth will unite us and it will set us free. As a child, when I had to do book reports for school, I remember we had a 14-volume Encyclopedia Britannica. And I always wanted to mention in my book report something about my people, Black people. But that Encyclopedia Britannica never provided me the words or the knowledge to uplift Black people in my report. This is the volume of the encyclopedia that I always looked for as a child and was never able to find. I want us to be able to amplify this body of knowledge, this truthful narrative, by making sure that children all across the state of California have access to this report, so that they understand the contribution that African Americans have made to the fabric of our nation, of our society. Changing the narrative, repairing the narrative, that is a pivotal part of reparations. And so I thank every member of this task force, every person at the DOJ who gave so much of himself to build this monument of truth.
Any other task force member like to speak at this time?
It's hard to say anything more that has already been said so eloquently and articulately. I do want to sort of give a comment, as I'll call myself an outsider. Somewhat the only task force member who is not African American on this task force. And personally, I have sort of see it as my role to reach out to non-Black audiences, not only the Japanese American community, one of the very few populations that's seen reparations in modern times, but everybody else. And the reason for that is we've got to create the political will. We have to move the needle of public opinion in order for legislation to be passed. Why do I say that? Because it's the same process that the Japanese American community went through that I was a part of. And I have to say, I'm delighted that you are all here. Some of the comments have been powerful, angry, upsetting, hurtful even. But it's something I have seen before within our own community. And we have to come together in order for anything to get passed. Some things that were said in our movement, you couldn't take back. But yet, we still had to come together. It was different. There's no equivalent between what we went through and what African Americans are going through. And I'm not trying to pose that. I'm just trying to give you an experience that we went through. And part of that was using a report as an organizing tool. That tool was a report from the Commission on Wartime Relocation and Internment of Civilians. That report helped us move the needle of public opinion. That is one reason why this report is so critical. It's not like the scholarship has not been there, but this report has synthesized and integrated hundreds of sources, a lot of it very recent, literally written in the last year. And that combats the willful erasure, the willful amnesia, the denial of history and humanity that we've so often seen. The second thing that this report done that is unusual is that connects the dots. It draws a through line between the oppression of the past and today's consequences, not only through enslavement, but racial violence, political disenfranchisement, healthcare, policing, in 13 horrific chapters, hard to read, but important. The important thing, too, about this report is that you don't have to have a PhD to understand it. It's written plainly, it's written clearly, it's written with an unblinking eye. And so, as an organizing tool, as a way to reach beyond the African-American community, to begin to create the political will that America has to confront this, not only in California, but nationwide. This report is a huge, groundbreaking contribution to the public. There's about 30 municipal county truth and reconciliation commissions or reparations task force that are working on this. They don't have the resources that California and the Department of Justice has put into this. This report is helpful to them, as it will be into the individual local efforts in California.
each group can augment their own history, whether it's Mississippi, Texas, Rhode Island, Connecticut, Illinois, and so on. I also want to say this report gives a basis to create creative works on this, to amplify it. It's hard to get people to read 500 pages, so it has to be broken down into bite-sized digestible pieces. Examples of this, Chris Lodson is doing reading of this report. There are Japanese American groups have created book clubs in which they're going to be reading chapter by chapter of this. I've talked to professors of higher education that want to create brochures, PowerPoints, documentary films, dramatic works, graphic novels, audiobooks out of this. So it gives a platform for each of us to amplify this. So it's not something that should sit on the shelf. It is a wake-up call for America. And I'm next to the oldest guy in this room, probably. But I do want to say I do remember the Kerner Commission report of 1968, following the urban uprisings of 1967. The president called for a commission to study where this was coming from. The Kerner Commission attempted to do that, this sort of connecting the dots, tracing a through line from enslavement of the past right to the present. That chapter, however, was 40 pages. This is almost 500 pages. The Kerner Commission's predictions, sadly, almost all of them came true. Why? Because the report was largely ignored. America didn't want to hear it. So I think our role, is to make sure America hears this. And so, again, it's not just a study. This is an important shining a light, opening people's eyes moment. I do want to ask Michael Newman and Damon Brown if they could help us understand how much work went into this. My understanding is that there were 30 or more staffers that went into this, worked on this day and night, and that it also crossed many different departments. That's probably unlike any other legislation that California has considered in recent memory, where that many people were involved in this effort. Why? Because this is crucial, and it's crucial not only to African Americans, but the soul of the country, what this country is going to stand for going forward and what it needs to repair. So I thank everybody here. I want to thank each task force member for their contribution to this report. And if the chair would allow me, I would like to ask Michael Newman and Damon Brown to say a few words.
I have a question.
I have a question, please. And I preface this question by saying, down in Mississippi, where I came from, we learned how to pat our head and rub our belly at the same time. And my question for this panel and for the staff, does every member of the assembly and the Senate have a copy of this document now? Well, here's where we're setting ourselves up for failure. We don't need to give them the luxury of saying we haven't seen it. And I would suggest that from this meeting that the staff make sure every member of that assembly has this document now, and the Senate, and the governor's office. Please, pretty please. Let's do it, as I can say.
So now we'll turn to the DOJ. If you have comments or remarks.
Thank you, Chair Moore, and to all members of the task force. We truly appreciate the comments this morning, acknowledging the work that the Department of Justice has had the honor of supporting the work of this task force. It was mentioned earlier that over 30 attorneys and more than 50 members of DOJ staff collectively have been working in some capacities on a full-time basis in the preparation of the report, in the research that has gone into it, and into the supporting the task force members in their tasks in putting forth recommendations. I am honored to be part of that team. Michael Newman, to my left, who heads our civil rights section, has been responsible for supervising this work. We have retired annuitants from the Department of Justice who have come back to work specifically because of their commitment and passion to seeing this across the finish line. And to all the staff that you see here that are responsible for the meetings and the technology, they work tirelessly. And it, while it is part of their job, it is also a passion and a commitment that allows them to do this work so well. So I'd like to personally thank all of you from DOJ who are here, those who are not, for all of the work that you have done. And I'd also like to turn it back to the task force to commend you all, because I think members of the public may not necessarily know the extent to which these nine individuals are working tirelessly behind the scenes, from subcommittee meetings to consistent calls from us, from appearances. I think Chair Moore spent her entire summer traveling all over the country speaking about this work. The staff of Reggie Jones Sawyer and Stephen Bradford's offices, we could not have gotten this report across the finish line if it were not for his staff meticulously, their staff meticulously assisting with the finalization of that work. And to Member Grills and Dr. Lewis and everyone who has been fielding media inquiries and meeting in public and community events, this is all supportive of the work that we are collectively doing. And lastly, to the point that Don Tamaki made, it does take allyship for this to be successful. And I'd like to personally thank him when he had, was being recognized and honored by the Japanese American Bar Association this summer. He dedicated the entirety of his keynote speech to uplifting this report and calling for others who do not look like us to support this effort. And I thought that that was an incredible gesture and truly reflects his commitment as a member of this task force to ensuring that the work gets done. And lastly, I would just like to thank our Attorney General, Rob Bonta, for allowing me to lead this team and for his commitment to making sure that this task force is properly resourced. While we had over 75 people getting to this point, it will require almost double that effort for us to meet that June 30th, 2023 deadline that we are committed to making sure is met. And so we will employ the resources necessary. We thank the members of the legislature for appropriating funds to make sure that that happens. And we thank the community for your input and engagement, because this report was replete with your public comments, with the comments from the witnesses and others who have contributed. This is truly a collective effort. And I just wanted to thank everyone for their support.
Okay. So we'll conclude this part of the agenda, but before we do so, and before I ask any other task force members if they have any last comments, the California Reparations Task Force, we will be traveling throughout the state of California as we continue this work. And I think it's important that I highlight some of the city-specific facts that are in our report pertaining to Los Angeles, and I'll probably do the same for Oakland and wherever else we go. So these are just some of the facts that you can find in our interim report about the city of Los Angeles. So in the 1920s, LA was an epicenter of KKK activity. There were over 3,000 members. KKK chapters included areas in Santa Monica, Huntington Park, Redondo Beach, Hermosa Beach, Long Beach, Glendale, San Pedro, and Anaheim. In 1920, city government officials were KKK members or had KKK ties, including the mayor of LA, the DA of LA, and LAPD. Also, LASD Sheriff Nathan regularly recruited from the KKK. California sundown towns included most of the suburbs of Los Angeles. Also, in 1909, 36% of black residents of LA were homeowners, before the implementation of policies and the carrying out of violent acts designed to prevent Black ownership. So what are the implications of that today? Well, today, Black folks in LA own less homes than they did in 1909. Also, there was a historic, prosperous neighborhood in LA called Sugar Hill. Hattie McDaniel, the first African-American person to win an Oscar, lived there. Someone named Norman Houston, who was the co-founder of the largest Black-owned insurance company in the West, and singer Ethel Waters all lived there in that neighborhood. In 1945, a white neighborhood association sued to apply its restrictive covenant to evict the Black families there. They were successful, and Sugar Hill, the Black neighborhood, was destroyed to create the I-10 freeway. Also, today, in 2014, based on the Color of Wealth report of a study of the LA metro area, found that the median value of liquid assets for Native-born Black Americans was $200, compared for white households, which was over $200,000. So those are just some of the facts that you can find in our interim report. There's over 218 references to the city of Los Angeles. So if you're just interested in specific facts around our city, feel free to just search Los Angeles in the interim report, and you'll find these facts. Thank you. Does anyone else have? All right, so in the interest of time, maybe Devon's got a little bit to recognize.
Thank you. Hello? Sorry, good morning, everybody. Again, I just want to repeat the facts that have been shared. And I just want to, and Damon, thank you for bringing this up. I just want to draw attention that this is the story of Black Americans in the state and of their ancestors. And can you hear me? You can't hear me?
We can if you talk.
Do you want me to yell? All right. So again, I'm repeating the stance that everybody has shared. And I just want to draw attention, which Damon began to do, to the fact that this report, in its 500 pages, is only part of the story of Black Americans in the state and of their ancestors. This is the testimony that can no longer be denied. Moreover, this report puts on record and gives account for how exactly the state was made, and in fact, how this state continues to operate. So despite the fact that there are many narratives about the state of California, one of the members of the public comment community mentioned how he had heard Gavin Newsom inviting people, I think, in the state of Florida to come to California. There's always this narrative, this myth of California's progress and progressiveness, and now we know what makes it possible. And so I think, if nothing else, this is the receipt. This is the receipt for which we are now, over the next year, going to be working to bring redress for and to bring to account. And so while the 500 pages certainly has told a very damning history of Black American experience in this state and in the country, the work of the task force going forward is actually to bring about the ultimate and long-delayed liberation and exercising of your self-determination. And so I think that I want us to amplify this report, and I want us to amplify this history, but I don't want Black Americans to be victim to a single narrative. What we understand by this report is that at every single juncture of this country's history, of the state's history, Black Americans have overcome the white supremacist barriers. And it's those barriers that have, in fact, been the making of opportunity for other communities in this state and in this country. And so I don't want that to become the narrative where, so I'll just say, one of my favorite rap groups growing up was Goody Mob. And Goody Mob had a line, in the third grade, this is what you were told. You were bought and you were sold. That is not the only story. And it will not continue to be the basis upon which the Black American community in this state or in this country shall be defined. The work of reparations, which we're going to work very hard to accomplish over this next year, will be for you to determine your future. And so I give thanks for the work of everybody. And I give thanks for the public testimony. On page 2, there's a list of all the witnesses who came and brought the grief and the trauma of their own experience and of their ancestors to bear on this report and on this task force. But I really do hope that as much as we pay attention to those histories, we are providing adequate time and energy in these community meetings that we're having, in the quiet discussions that you're having with your families about what the future for Black Americans will be in the state and in this country. Because this is what reparations will hopefully accomplish in the end. It's not just an accounting of the injuries of the past, but laying the foundation for a free and self-determined future.
Thank you all. So before we go to our next agenda item, I want to open up any space for any potential motion. Potential.
Madam Chair, members of the task force, I'd like to offer a motion.
Good morning.
That staff make sure the Governor Newsom and the Lieutenant Governor and the Assembly and the Senate immediately get copies of this document.
It has been properly moved by Vice Chair Brown and properly seconded by Member Reggie Jones-Sawyer that the Governor, Lieutenant Governor, California State Assembly, and California State Senate immediately receive copies of our interim report to their respective offices. Is there any discussion on the matter?
Georgia.
Hearing no discussion, we'll turn to Parliamentarian Johnson for a roll call vote.
Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will begin with Chair Moore.
Aye.
Vice Chair Brown.
Aye.
Member Bradford.
Aye.
Member Grill.
Aye.
Member Holder.
Aye.
Thank you. Member Jones Sawyer.
Aye.
Member Lewis.
Aye.
Member Montgomery Steph.
Aye.
Member Tamaki.
Aye.
Madam Chair, there are 9 members present in voting, 9 ayes in favor of the motion, and 0 nays.
Thank you, Parliamentarian Johnson. There are 9 ayes, 0 nays. So the ayes have it and the motion carries. Our interim report will be sent to the Governor's Office, Lieutenant Governor, California State Assembly, and California State Senate. So we are leading into our lunch hour, but we have another discussion and potential action item to cover before we break for lunch, which is subpoena advisory committee report by members Holder and Tamaki with the DOJ Research Center. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to give a little bit of background of this, and it's going to be more in the nature of a report. Hopefully we can do 15 minutes and reserve in the next meeting or perhaps the meeting thereafter for a more full report on what this subcommittee has been doing, this advisory committee. In December of 2021, Member Lisa Holder noted that the legislation passed creating this commission also granted it certain subpoena power or the power to compel responses from both public and private parties. She then felt and moved the task force into saying, you know, we should use that in a way that would fulfill some of the principles of reparations. One of those principles is guarantees of non-repetition, that is to say, stopping the harm. And that's a different sort of category of reparations and compensation or restitution or some of the others. And so we were looking for an area that where we wouldn't get mired in litigation beyond the life of the task force and that could be done relatively efficiently and yet fulfill an important goal of this task force. And after doing some research around and meeting with experts working in the criminal justice arena in order to fulfill the Racial Justice Act, which was a 2021 piece of legislation that prohibits bias in the criminal justice system and empowers or allows a person who's been accused or a defendant to challenge that criminal process or conviction upon being able to show bias in the system. What they told us, the experts, is that even though the Racial Justice Act provided this remedy in 2021, how can you enforce that? How can the Racial Justice Act have any meaning? And of course, if a prosecutor, for instance, the LA Times in today's article talks about Richard Latham, who was prosecuted by a prosecutor who used racial slurs and evidence bias, that, of course, would create a more provable instance of bias. But what about everybody else, which is more typically the case? And it falls down to basically what data is being collected by courts, by district attorneys, by city attorneys doing prosecutions. And they told us basically that we don't even know what is being tracked. And if they're not tracking racial data, then it may be almost impossible to prove, for example, biases in charging. Are Black Americans being charged more and more severely than other ethnic groups? What about diversion? Who is getting diversion? What is the racial data, if it exists, say about that? What about sentencing? Are Black people being sentenced more severely and for longer periods than other ethnic groups? And what we discovered was the state of the knowledge of what was being collected in being able to prove the Racial Justice Act was completely unknown. For example, not only does the public and advocates not know that whether courts and district attorney's office track people being processed through the criminal justice system on the basis of race, but what kind of software do they use? Is this data that can be easily retrievable by an electronic inquiry? Does the software exist? And so on. And so with the help of the main driver being the research center of the Department of Justice, Lisa Holder and I have been meeting with them as well as with advocates. And ultimately, we devised a 24-item questionnaire that was sent out to 58 counties, 58 district attorney's offices, 58 superior courts and city attorneys, to basically ask them, what are you tracking and what data exists? How easily can it be retrieved? And drilling down into, for example, not only the racial background of the defendants, but also of the victims. And whether, for instance, of victims who are African-American, whether the alleged perpetrators in those situations are being treated on equal basis or not. And for example, the missing white woman syndrome, where one group gets particular attention and other groups don't capture public attention. And so the questionnaire was finalized. It was sent out in April, and we've gotten responses. And that is, I'm going to turn it over to Lisa to talk about basically the responses from the courts, from the DAs and others, which has been robust. It's been more than I expected, frankly, especially as compared to the responses to the requests of advocates who had asked for this information but had been unable to get it. And here's a situation where the task force was able to use that authority, I think, effectively. The extent of how effective will, however, will depend upon how the data is going to be looked at and shaped and what is to follow, which might be follow-up questionnaires or other kinds of things. So I want to turn that over to Lisa to talk further about what the plan will be.
Thanks, Don. Now, one of the objectives here in using this power to compel information from public bodies.
You speak more loudly.
You can't hear. One of the objectives here in using this power that we've been granted to compel information from public bodies, such as district attorney's offices, superior courts, and city attorney's offices, is to ensure that system-impacted people can have the statistics and the data to prove and to show when their convictions, sentences have been infected by racism. The Racial Justice Act exists in the law, but right now it's been impossible for defenders and system-impacted people to get the data that they need to overturn these, to overturn racist convictions and racist decisions in the criminal justice system. So one of the things that's really critical is for us to understand what data is being collected. The surveys that the DOJ staff and researchers helped us put together, Tatiana Kaplan, Tiffany Jantz, and Randy Chance, thank you so much to those DOJ researchers who helped us put together the surveys that we sent out to the 58 counties to find out what data are you collecting? What systems are you using to collect that data? So now we have responses from almost 100% of the district attorney's offices, superior court, and city attorney's offices that are the prosecuting bodies in our state. So the next step at this point is to continue to work with defenders, subject matter experts who understand the Racial Justice Act and understand how this data can be used to help system-impacted people overturn these wrongful decisions in the criminal justice system. We are asking, essentially, for this task force to continue to give Don Tamaki and myself the power to work with Racial Justice Act experts to continue to compel all of these charging authorities to give us more information, more data, so that we can start to effectively enforce the Racial Justice Act and overturn wrongful convictions and wrongful decisions. So without getting too much into the weeds, we have compiled a report for the task force and the public to look at that shows, that exemplifies across the board, gives us a snapshot of what data is being collected by all of these different charging bodies and authorities, and where there may be gaps in the data and where there may be a lack of uniformity that is preventing system-impacted people and defenders from utilizing the Racial Justice Act effectively. So please, when you have a moment, take a look at that data that we have collected. Now that we have the basic information about what data these offices are collecting, now we can take the next step and start to ask them substantive questions about statistics around race. We want to work with the subject matter experts who understand the Racial Justice Act to formulate the next set of questions that we are going to be asking these officers. And so that's the update. That's where we are. And we just wanted to make sure that you all understood where we were going and approved the methodology that we're using.
Thank you. Member Bradford?
Does it require action by this body for them to continue on with the work?
I think
that
we
doing?
Have the authority. Okay. I don't think we need another motion.
Okay, good. Yep. I would strongly encourage us to continue with the work that has been done here. It's critically important. Thank you.
I had a question about press. I know we've gotten a lot of press since we started, but I think most journalists haven't really covered what we're doing with our subpoena power. So, I don't know, maybe we can table it for another discussion, but you guys can let me know. When do you think would be an appropriate time for press?
I think after we further study and meet with the experts and then formulate with the Department of Justice the next steps, that might be an opportune time to speak to the public and do a press release of some kind.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments or questions? All right. Okay, well, it is 12:02, and we are into our lunch period. So lunch ends at 12:45, and then we will resume at 12:45. The first item on the agenda after lunch is scope of work and outline of contents of report 2. Then we'll have a break, and then we'll have a discussion about the Bunch Center's report on community engagement, then a report on communication strategy. Our second to last item will be a discussion on leadership roles and assignments for part 2 of the task force. And then the last item on our agenda for today will be Department of Justice updates. So please come back at 12:45 to resume the hearing. Thank you.
God, no, that sounds terrible. But I am 33. I've got a respected body of work. I can self-work anywhere. I'm writing a book.
You hate places like that.
I got an apartment in Boston. Look, it's you. It's always going to be you. I know you love me too. I know our past. But I look from Everest to Mumbai, and you're the only place that feels like home. Right here. This is home to me. Can I come home?
Good morning, Georgia.
Cynthia Ford, a mayor who cares. She's a mother. She cares. No one cares more than her.
Is this a fun role thing?
But Paul Randall, we've been playing the defensive. It's time to hit the offense. And I know, don't go low, don't kick him in the nuts, blah, 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 Michelle Obama, but what if we go positive? We turn the rally into a place to make immediate change.
Thank you.
you know, a lot of the time I feel like a lot of or like my friends don't really know me, or maybe I just don't know how to be myself around them. But with you, it's like taking a vacation from all of that. A vacation. Not the full of keys. I'm a person. Breaking up with me? Yeah. Oh my God. I was saying I didn't mean that. Breaking up with me? This is really hard. I don't want to hurt you. And there's nothing wrong with you. You're a great girlfriend. I don't see it working when I go to college. Oh, my finger. You don't love me? It just doesn't feel like you would hope it would when, like, if you really knew. Can I hug you? I'm gonna go. Can you not?
Through the lens of the world of existence.
Really? What's going on?
Yeah, you're pissed.
I begged you not to sleep with Mom. She's happy, Dad. Happier than I've ever seen her.
I respect that.
If you do, can you stop messing with her?
Not that simple.
Yes, it is. Why can't you leave her alone?
Because you can't choose who you love. Your person is your person, and that is undeniable. I'm not going to have that. Look, I want us to be a family. For real. How's that book going?
Good.
Did you figure out the code yet?
47 knobs out.
That's the address to an apartment in Boston. I want us all to live together.
Am I doing that?
Sure, yeah.
But Mom agrees. But what about Paul?
She's going to talk to him. I'm sorry it took so long for your mom and I to get this right.
Yeah, well, you both are assholes. I don't understand. I thought she loved me back.
Oh, babe.
I don't know. She's just so mature, okay? She doesn't know what she's doing. She's not on your level. She's not on my level. My level is like crazy without her. She's like, it's this level, right? What level does she want? And that she's stuck. No, she's so stuffy. Good one.
You know what? I've already forgotten about her. Stuffy who? Isn't she that basic bitch that's always posting thirst traps on social media?
Thirst traps.
God, she's so hot. I'm never going to do someone that hot ever again. And is that what you guys think? It was like a lot in the first.
What?
No. Now I'm here, Tifo.
Max, you shouldn't even be sad. You should get mad instead. Mad is healthier.
Is it? Screw her. Who does she think she is? I'm over it. She's dead to me.
Dead.
Buried. Bottom of the ocean. Fish food.
Yeah. Fish food. Mad. Yeah. You know what? You know what's going to make you feel better?
Really?
Yes.
hang out with my family for a little bit, see what happens, like, what's on good then. Hey, okay. Look, God is not always on top. And when the right person loves you, you feel it. This is love. I do love you.
What are you doing here?
This is your room, huh? Are you doing? I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I know you're ignoring me. I know it's all my fault. I said all those mean things, and I'm the reason you got hurt.
I wasn't out there for you. I haven't seen my phone since you actually. Probably on the side of the road somewhere.
Hey, guys, what's up? Max is trying to call it okay. Thought I was just going to get you. Nothing was frightening their habitat.
care about the impairment.
Exactly. All scary things chasing them on the other end, so they learn to swim. This isn't working, Dad.
Don't do this again. I'm her father. You can just take off. I didn't see my daughter for almost a year. It's not okay, George.
I know. I'm not. You're angry, but you love me. And I want you to keep loving me. But that would stop if you see me as a prison and not a person. I want you to get everything you want. That can't happen if I'm holding you back. We're like the penguin. We can't fly. Maybe we can learn to swim. Did you see the way the crowd responded? You were amazing.
I felt good, but that was all you, Georgia.
You actually missed.
I know. I knew this was coming.
Don wants a day.
Give me a real try.
I'm so sorry.
Wow, this is double.
I slept with him.
Did you get it out of your system? Come on, Georgia, did you really think I didn't know you were going to sleep with him?
I'm sorry.
No, don't do that. Don't end things with me because you were weak and gave into some unresolved feelings. Because that is what's happening here, right? Georgia, do not tell me that you are that short-sighted that you cannot.
I've got history.
Exactly. That's all you had. Zion is your past. He is not your future. But don't beat around the bush with me, Georgia. We are the same people, you and I. And it's not always pretty, but we are cut from the same cloth. I knew it from the moment you pulled that stunt with your organic lunch. Power. Power. There. Power is what we need. It's what we eat. We both have something to prove, and goddammit, we are going to prove it. And together, we can be unstoppable. And Zion, he doesn't see that side of you. So now you need to choose. I bought that for you right after our first date because I knew that a woman like you only comes around once in a lifetime. George Miller, I see you. I see how unlike you are. I see that it gnaws at you, that it keeps you up at night, and he doesn't see that. What do you want for yourself? When you close your eyes and your picture of 1, 2, you see. Why do you want more?
What is it?
I'm ready.
Really? Oh, after everything, after that whole speech, that's it? That was all bullshit. Now, you came in here like a tornado, and now you're just leaving. Well, that's perfect.
I don't want to leave.
Riddle me this.
You want me to leave.
Riddle me that. How do you know what I want?
I know you better than anyone. I saw you today. And I want you to get everything that you are.
Are you more comfortable with staff to be hungry?
Well, I wasn't a virgin this time. Plus, I did some Googling.
Wait. What?
No, not in like a creepy way, just research.
No. So you were a virgin? When we...
Yeah.
Why didn't you tell me?
I hope you didn't think I was cool.
I would have gone blue.
Hey, my mom died last year. For a couple of months after that, things got really bad for me. I'd be at school, whenever talking to people, and I just wanted to scream at them. Can't you see any dough? Well, obviously, I never did that. And I thought about dying. Why? I'm like, okay, there's that option. He's just got really dark. And I really scared myself. Sight of the light. And we don't have to talk about it. But you can. Sure.
Okay.
You know.
I have these feelings like they're going to explode out of my eyes, teeth. I'm learning concentrate, like a release, and then I feel better.
Okay. Maybe my health sucks. I went to therapy. With medicine. Things happen.
Yeah. I guess I thought it was okay to just know I'm doing better. So what happens now?
I have no idea.
The letters from your dad, not sending the one you wrote. This is bullshit. Georgia may be able to keep lying to me, but I won't let her keep guilting you. Come on, we're gonna mail these.
Their knowledge of the world is made for